Welcome back to part two of the Healing Marriage course. In the first part, we looked at unity and how we can become one in marriage. In this second part, we want to go a step further and look at communication, which is a very important topic in marriage because communication enables us to share our lives together.
Good communication strengthens unity and brings healing to our marriage, but poor communication isolates us from one another and brings pain. We'll be looking at what the Bible has to say about good communication, what makes communication difficult, and how we can learn to communicate better so that we can create a healing atmosphere in our marriage.
Exactly. And by the way, when we talk about communication, we are not just talking about talking and listening to each other. Communication is much more than that. It also includes what we transmit to each other through our looks, touch, actions, and also sexual intimacy, which is also a form of communication in marriage.
That's right, so it's a big topic. Before we get started, you may want to grab a piece of paper and a pen, because as well as the insights we'll be sharing with you, we'll also be including some exercises to do together, as we did in the first part, and you might want to write something down.
Exactly. And God is the author of marriage, and he created us to communicate deeply with him and each other. So let's start by looking together at what the Bible says about communication. We read in James 1:19, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry."
And then in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1, it says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger."
And in Ephesians 4:29, we read, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen."
And Proverbs 12, verse 18 says, "The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing."
And Colossians 4:6, it says, "Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone."
And finally, in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19, it says, "Sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues." So as you can see from these verses we read, and there are many more about communication in the Bible, good communication is very important because it influences our relationships, and good communication can have a healing effect on relationships, especially in marriage, which is what we're talking about here. You can't have a relationship without any communication. So the question is how we communicate. And as we saw in these Bible verses that we read to you, there is good and bad communication. And we want to learn how to avoid bad or destructive negative communication and promote good positive communication in our marriages. And good communication helps us to keep the peace. And as we said, bad communication promotes conflict.
Yes, and with good communication, we can restore or build unity in marriage when we have lost the connection. And as we saw in the Bible verses, the right words at the right time have a healing effect. And we can already see that a marriage can be healing if we choose the right words. If we learn to repeatedly restore unity in marriage through good communication, we open the way for a beautiful and also romantic relationship. The feeling of being understood by the other person is very precious, and also it opens the way for good sex.
Yeah, and our romantic relationship will also suffer if we have poor or maybe insufficient communication going on between us. If we don't understand each other, we won't feel very close to one another, and ultimately our sexual intimacy will suffer.
Exactly. So let me give you an example. A husband or wife comes home tired after work one day. Maybe they had a bad day and have a lot of pent-up frustration about how things went at work, but they don't say anything about it to their partner. Maybe they don't want to talk about it just yet. Their partner doesn't ask how their day was either and assumes everything is fine. They don't know what their partner is feeling. It just takes a little thing to spark an argument. And if you don't ask each other how we are or share how we are feeling, then it's very easy to get upset or annoyed about something else and stir up conflict instead of talking about how we are or why we are angry.
That's right. That's married couples in particular who are perhaps not very communicative by nature can perhaps learn something here from this example. It's not too difficult to learn to ask questions, to find out how the other person is doing. And if you ask questions, you can guide the conversation in a good direction and show that you're interested in the other person.
Yeah, so we can think about good questions to ask. We can give you some examples. So it can be a question like, how are you? Did you have a good day? What did you do today? Did you find anything particularly challenging today? What are you looking forward to this week? Do you face any specific challenges this week? Can I do something to help you? Do you feel annoyed about anything? Or is something upsetting you?
So it's worth asking questions like these every day or at least a few times a week to find out how the other person is doing. And obviously, we're not talking about bombarding the other person with
No.
questions, are we? I think men don't like to be asked too many questions.
Especially when we are tired.
Yeah. But you could also say, I'd like your opinion on something, or I want to run something by you. So anyway, this strengthens unity and joy in the relationship because we all want to feel cared for, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. I want to share an example. We were counseling a couple a few years ago where the man comes from a family where they only ever worked and never talked much at a table. They sat down, they ate, left the table, and got on with work. This isolated him within the family. But he has now learned that he can use the shared meal times to talk to his family because he has decided that he wants a different atmosphere in his home and that he wants to build a culture of trust and be closer to his wife and to his children. He has understood that to do that, he would need to start learning to ask questions and listen carefully to the answers, and he's learning to communicate better with his family, which is wonderful.
It is. It's really great and so easy to do. Just start with
Yeah.
some questions and listening. And you might be listening today and thinking, well, you know what? That sounds a bit like me, the situation of that man. I grew up in a similar situation. We didn't talk much in our family either, or at least not about personal things. And perhaps, like the man you just mentioned, Danny, you've allowed this to influence your communication with your partner and with others. And maybe, like this man, you want to say today, you know, I want to learn to communicate better. I want to decide to create a different atmosphere in my marriage and in my home.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do a first exercise to this topic and pause for a moment and ask ourselves as a couple, or if you're listening on your own, you can do this exercise individually as well. What place does communication have in our marriage? And second, where do we already communicate well and where can we improve something?
So let's move on now to the second point, which is good communication can be a struggle. I want to talk about this, that in our marriage and in marriage, we have a constant enemy in the spiritual world who is very interested in us not understanding each other or in us misunderstanding each other. And that is his strategy. And in the original Greek language of the New Testament, our enemy is called diabolos. That comes from the Greek word diabalo, which means to accuse and slander in English.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what destroys our marriage, isn't it? When we
Yeah.
accuse and slander each other, and
Very
instead of
much so.
having a friendly word like we read about in those verses, we're in accusation and all of that misunderstandings are going on. So we want to look now at seven things that can make communication in marriage more difficult.
Yeah, there's one thing, very important thing, the language barriers. Communication has always been a challenge for Esther and me, hasn't it,
It
Esther?
has been, yes.
Yeah, since Esther grew up in Kenya and England, and she's a native English speaker of English, and I grew up in Switzerland, and I'm a native speaker of Swiss German. We've had to overcome various language and cultural barriers since we've got married.
That's right. And a second The second point that makes communication more difficult in marriage is, of course, cultural differences. So not just language differences, but cultural differences as well, because for good communication, it's not enough to have a good command of the other person's language if they speak a different language, but you also need to learn what the words can mean in the other person's culture and in their context. And Swiss people tend to communicate more directly, I'd say. My experience of English people is that they tend to communicate more indirectly, with slightly more restraint, or they hint at something, and then people generally get the idea of what they're saying. So, for example, I remember people would say, "Oh, it's a bit chilly in here," and what they actually mean is, you know, "Can you close the window or can you turn up the heating?"
Yeah, exactly. And the Swiss person would rather ask directly whether they could close the window or just close the window themselves without saying anything.
Just get up and close the window. So sometimes we had this problem. It's a cultural problem. You didn't get my hints, or you didn't understand what I was trying to say, which was for me clear what I was trying to say. So you started to ask me to say, "Look, Esther, can you say what you want to say? Can you just say short, clear sentences so that I can understand?" And I often got the feeling, before we kind of worked this out, that you weren't making an effort to understand me, and you just thought I was complicated and so on, until we realized that we had a cultural problem that we needed to work on.
Well, exactly. It took some time to realize this, you know, but so for example, you had to learn that I don't think it's rude when you tell me something straight out. And on the other hand, I had to learn to think a little bit more when you try to tell me something that wasn't immediately clear to me. And I had to learn to be more patient and sometimes ask questions without getting impatient. And to think about the different cultures is particularly important here in Switzerland, as we have many different cultures and regions in our beautiful country that you have to be aware of. Or when you marry someone from a different region. A man told us once about a couple who attended a seminar on communication he was running, who came up to him at the end, and they said they had finally realized where a lot of their marital conflicts come from. She was born from the German she was from the German speaking part of Switzerland, and he was from the Ticino, the Italian part. And she found more satisfaction from the work she accomplished, whereas he found more satisfaction in his relationships and friendships. And when they realized they had different cultural values in life, even though they were from the same country, they suddenly were able to understand each other much better.
It's crazy when you think about it, but these things can really make a difference. And it's important to remember to bear in mind that the different family cultures we come from, we could come from different family cultures as well, not just cultural regions, but family cultures can be different too. Yeah. So one partner, for example, may come from a family where people talk very loudly, and the other person might come from a family where they're much quieter. And so those can be factors. If we want to communicate better, we have to kind of sit down and agree on which culture we want to adopt in our own marriage, so that we both feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's really important. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we come to our second exercise, and we can think about the following thing together. Are there any language barriers in our marriage? And second, are there any cultural differences in our marriage?
So let's move on now. We're looking at seven things that can make communication in marriage difficult. And number three is the tone, the volume, and the facial expression. So the tone in which you say something is very important. If you say something in a certain tone, it can lead to the other person thinking you're annoyed, even though maybe that's not the case. You can also communicate a lot with your facial expression and create or give the wrong impression about how you're feeling or what you're thinking. And the volume also plays a central role and is often the precursor to physical violence when things start to get very, very loud. If you want to improve communication in your marriage and avoid escalation of arguments and conflicts, it's often worthwhile really sitting down and thinking about your volume, your tone, and your facial expression, and working on those areas. So we want to do a third exercise together, or you might want to do this when you go to bed tonight, for example. You might want to look in the mirror and observe your facial expression. Ask yourself, do I have a friendly face, or do I look a bit grumpy?
Like grumpy cat.
Like grumpy cat, yeah. And sometimes you'd be surprised, wouldn't you? People can think they look like one thing, and then
yeah, and the expression
they do that,
can
and then they realize, yeah. So let's move on to the fourth thing now. What would you say, Danny?
Well, the choice of words. In the Bible, we read that death and life are in the power of the tongue. We read this in Proverbs 18:21, and that the tongue is a fire, a world of injustice, and that we use it to praise God and curse people. Mm. That's in James 3:6-9. There are certain words and insults that can put a lot of strain on a relationship. Often words can be said in an argument that you know will hurt the other person. But the good news is that we have free will and can choose words in such a way that they either build up or destroy our partner, and it's really up to us. Often you may think that in certain situations you may have the right to say certain words to the other person, but often this supposed right leads to a type of communication where neither the volume nor the tone, the facial expression or the choice of words are right, often resulting in unnecessary conflict. In our counseling ministry, we have seen entire families who were simply used to insulting each other, which was horrible. The parents insult each other, siblings insult each other, children are rude to the parents, and parents insult the children.
Yes, and those sorts of situations are bad habits, and everybody needs help to break them. And we struggled with a bad choice of words at times in our own marriage in the early years. We were also very young. Well, that doesn't mean that when you're old, you're not going to necessarily be better at your choice of words.
Age, no.
But we had to decide at some point, and we actually promised each other that we would no longer use certain words, even when we were very angry with each other. And since making that decision and stopping using those words that could offend or hurt the other person, we found that we had much more peace automatically in our relationship.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean that our differences don't have to be discussed or talked about. On the contrary, it is really very important to take time to resolve differences. However, you have to decide to choose the right moment and the right words so that you don't hurt the other person unnecessarily. And of course, make sure that the volume, tone and facial expression is right when you talk about these things.
And I want to read another verse from Proverbs 16 verse 24. Gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. It's also important to say that the tone of voice, the facial expression, volume and choice of words can also trigger something in your spouse. You may suddenly remember a bad teacher or a difficult brother or sister or a strict father or whatever it might be, and it can then be helpful to pray for inner healing and deliverance in your marriage. And that is what you need to be able to overcome those things. And we'll talk about these topics in the fourth and the fifth part of the course.
Yeah, so let's move down to the fifth thing you want to look at, the constant complaining, which can make communication difficult. There are people who see something negative in everything. You probably know some people yourself. Now, as a result, they are constantly complaining and criticizing and see nothing positive anywhere or in anyone. And it goes without saying that such an attitude to life has a negative impact on relationships, especially marriage. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Thessalonians, "Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus."
That's such a key verse. This is God's will to give thanks in all circumstances. And so people can even become ill due to their partner's constant nagging and negative attitude to life. It's not just ourselves that are bogged down and burdened with it. We affect our partner as well. But gratitude is the best way to overcome a bad mood and complaining, and the best way to change the atmosphere between us, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we want to do another exercise together. We want to pause and think for a moment about the following three questions. You may want to write something down. Firstly, when we communicate with each other, what tone of voice do we tend to use? What about the volume we speak at? What about our facial expression? You may need to ask yourself these questions over a week or two of observing. But what about our choice of words? Do we complain a lot in marriage?
Yeah, that's very important questions, and we can move on now to the sixth thing that can make communication difficult in marriage, and that's the refusal to communicate. A church minister in England told us about a married couple who lived under the same roof but had not talked to each other since they had an argument 18 years ago. Just imagine.
18 years.
They didn't speak to each other.
18 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful. They didn't speak to each other, but they still lived under the same roof.
Mm.
Some couples, they get in the habit of ignoring each other or stonewalling each other. They feel hurt and punish their partner by refusing to communicate with them. In certain situations, this can be a strategy to prevent escalation or violence, but in general, this approach doesn't really solve much. If tensions and issues aren't discussed through, problems aren't solved, they're simply put off until later.
Giving our partner the silent treatment is also very hurtful and humiliating, isn't it, for the partner who's being shut out, because you're actually saying, you know what, I don't feel like talking to you, I don't want to resolve our differences, you're at fault, it's your fault, it's not me, there's no reason for us to discuss anything, I'm just going to keep quiet until you've realised your mistake and apologise to me.
Yeah, so don't forget that, as we said at the beginning, communication is much more than just talking and listening to each other. Communication involves looks, touches, and also sexuality, which is also a form of communication, as we said before.
Mm-hmm.
So denying our partner these things to punish them is also refusing to communicate with them.
That's right. And the last thing we want to look at, is communication as a means of intimidation or domination. And when communication is used as a means of intimidation or domination, obviously that makes true and good communication very difficult. It's often used as a weapon, communication is, to dominate or intimidate a partner. Facial expression, choice of words, tone of voice are used consciously or unconsciously as a means of pressurizing or manipulating our partner to get them to do what we want. And as we said before, the tongue has power over life and death. That's why communication, the way we communicate, is so important.
Yeah.
That we don't use it to try to exercise control over our partner or manipulation.
Exactly. So we have now looked at seven things that can make communication in marriage difficult. Perhaps you've picked up on something that you need to work on and improve. And the good news is that with Christ's help, we can change and learn to communicate better. We don't have to stay the way we are, but sometimes we need healing and deliverance from past hurts from our childhood or adolescence or later in life that are influencing the way we communicate with each other, or maybe the way we don't communicate with each other. We will look at how to pray for healing and deliverance in the last two parts of this course. But for now, we want to stress that God wants us to be whole and that we can be happy together. Isn't it, Esther?
That's right. And for this reason, it's important that we take the time to look at our lives, that we work through any negative experiences, that we deal with any negative issues so that we can become whole as individuals and as a couple. Because if we're not healthy and emotionally hurt or spiritually bound, then we'll so often hurt our partner and find it very difficult to change. But as we become increasingly whole, our presence in our marriage will be a blessing. Our communication, our words will have a healing effect on our marriage.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to come back to the wonderful Bible verse that we read at the start of this section, which was from the book of Proverbs in 12:18, where it says, "The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." What this means in terms of marriage is that if both of us are healthy and we have our tongues under control, then our marriage can really be a wonderful and healing place, because both of us bring healing into our marriage through our words.
That would be wonderful, and that's what we want and want to encourage you to aim for.
Yeah.
So we want to come to a fifth exercise. We want to pause and ask ourselves individually, have you ever given your partner the silent treatment? And are you guilty of trying to punish or control or manipulate your partner by what you say or how you say it? And do you need healing or freedom from past experiences that you can see are negatively affecting your communication with your partner?
So now we'd like to move on and give you some tips on how we can improve communication and deal with conflict better in marriage in this last section. And first, the first tip we can give you is to make power decisions. If you want to improve our communication in marriage, we have to work on certain things. But the first step is always to decide that we want to communicate better with our partner in the future. As we heard before, there are various areas which can make communication difficult in marriage. And so you may need to decide to work on cultural and linguistic differences with the aim of understanding each other better. It's not always easy. It takes patience, but it works. It has worked with us, Esther, hasn't it? And yeah, sometimes you just have to take your time. Mm-hmm. Then second, decide not to raise your voice and not to shout at each other. Shouting, yeah, can be very violent. Mm-hmm. Decide not to look at each other angrily, despise each other, or try to control each other.
That's right. And other power decisions that you may need to make are to decide to avoid bad words and insults during arguments. That's not always easy to do, but it does really start with the decision. I want to stop that. I don't want to do that anymore. We're not going to use those words. And or to decide not to give your partner the silent treatment, including denying him or her sex as a means of punishment, as a weapon.
Yeah.
And decide not to constantly complain, question, criticize everything and everyone, but make the decision, I want to be grateful and I want to do what it says in 1 Thessalonians 5:18. I want to give thanks in all circumstances and be grateful and speak that out as well. And maybe something new that you want to decide to consciously make time or take time for communication.
Yeah, exactly. Consciously taking time for communication could, for example, mean that we plan a weekly marriage evening where we spend time together and share more about what's going on in our lives. The aim of a marriage evening or date night, as some people call it, should be to have fun, but also to strengthen our unity by taking time to communicate with each other and to learn to understand each other better and what motivates each of us or what each one is dealing with at the moment, but also things like talking about our fears and dreams.
The aim is to move beyond superficial levels of communication and talking about things like politics, economy, the weather, or so on, and go deeper to a point where we're actually discovering more about the other person, now learning to understand how the other person thinks and feels on a deeper level. And this enables us to grow closer to each other.
Exactly. And the aim is to create a culture of trust in our marriage so that we can also admit our weaknesses if need be. And this without fearing rejection or ridicule from our partner because of a weakness.
That's a really important point. How we react when our partner does open up about something personal is really important. So we need to be careful not to give harsh or flippant answers to what they're saying, like, oh, you're so stupid, or oh, it doesn't surprise me at all that you've gone and got yourself in this mess again, or something like that, because they're not going to want to open up again, are they, if they get that reaction?
Yeah, exactly. And also we need to be careful not to be influenced by the performance-driven thinking in society. This has no place in a marriage, and if we import these mindsets into our relationship, we can end up destroying each other. Because marriage should really be an oasis where we can recover from the pressure to perform and the stress of everyday life, and where we accept and love each other regardless of what else is going on at the moment.
And this is how marriage really becomes a healing place, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And so what you really need to do as a next point is to identify bitter roots that hinder a successful communication. As we have already said, making a power decision to communicate better is the first step. Then it is a matter of identifying whether there are any bitter roots that hinder the communication. You can consider whether you feel hurt somewhere or have not forgiven, and therefore no longer feel like communicating with your partner. Perhaps there is also a certain frustration about a certain situation that has taken away your desire to communicate. But we found the Holy Spirit can show here exactly what it is so that you can address it and deal with it.
That's right. And that's very liberating and wonderful to be able to involve the Holy Spirit there. And once we've identified any bitter roots between us, then the third step is to forgive each other where necessary. It's important to forgive each other and let go of any grudges. Then you can also check whether you can forgive your partner. Sometimes that's not possible. There are sometimes situations where we want to forgive, but we find it so hard to let something go. And it may be that we, if that's your situation, you need healing and deliverance prayers first, and then you'll find it so much easier to forgive. And we talk about that later in the course, and healing and deliverance in parts 4 and 5, as we've said before.
Yeah, that's right. And the next tip we can give you is a little bit more practical. We really recommend that you schedule some marriage business meetings. In many marriages and families, tensions, they arise over practical things that need to be done, but because we haven't discussed them and no decision have been made about what needs doing and who's going to do it and by when.
Yeah.
It's a real source of tension, isn't it, Esther?
Mm-hmm.
So let me share some of the topics that can be. It could be the needs and requests from children or grandchildren. It can be new purchases that need to be made.
To talk about in a business meeting in marriage.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It could be like the topics and talking about the just very practical things like cleaning and washing, planning holidays and free time, planning a marriage or date night, fixing up the apartment, or talking about the gardening, repairing the car, requests from other people for help, like meeting friends or church or ministry concerns and concerns related to clubs or societies you belong to, and make decisions in these things. Yeah.
Yeah, and marriage business meetings can be really helpful to avoid topics getting stacked up that become constant sources of unnecessary tension. So how do you go about organising such a meeting? Well, the first thing is obviously set a date and start and end time. Not endless for hours for the meeting. So for example, 30 minutes or an hour. And agree prior to the meeting on one and maximum three topics, probably one is enough in many cases, from your list for discussion. And then during your meeting, focus on what needs to be done, who's going to do it, and by when they're going to do it. And it's very helpful to write down what you decide together. And then schedule another meeting with the other topics for another time, like a follow-up meeting. And that many people find that very helpful to improve communication by just doing it in that ordered business-like way.
Yeah, exactly. And there's the next thing we want to talk about, being patient and gracious. And it brings us to the last point. Let's take, for example, the topic of forgetfulness. This can be a particular problem for older couples, but it can also affect younger ones.
As yes, younger we, couples as well.
As we have experienced also ourselves. Mm-hmm. As we get older, we sometimes forget things without bad intentions. We are not that old, as we said, but as we have observed in ourselves and in other couples, that forgetting can sometimes lead to real frustration and tension. One partner can assume that something is perfectly clear to the husband or wife because it is perfectly clear to them. And then they find out later that it wasn't clear to the other person at all, or it was no longer clear because he or she had actually forgotten something important without meaning to.
That's right. And it's very important that we treat each other kindly and that we make a conscious effort to ask whether something is completely clear or is it still clear, to just go through something quickly again, write down important dates or arrangements so that it's clear to both of you what's going to be happening and who's doing what, and things don't get forgotten, which is a source of a lot of bad communication and arguments later on. So we want to come to another exercise where we invite you to consider the following points, following questions. And really the first one is, how can each one of us, or how can each one of you, contribute to building a culture or trust in your marriage? And then second, are there bitter roots in your marriage that you need to look at on your own or together? And could you benefit from marriage business meetings? And lastly, is forgetfulness a problem in your marriage? And if so, how can you deal with it better?
So let's summarize. We've reached the end of this section on learning to communicate better in marriage, and we can quickly recap on what we looked at. We learned that God is the author of marriage and he created us to communicate deeply with him and each other. And we saw bad communication can destroy a relationship, but good communication builds unity and brings healing to a marriage. Then we looked at seven things that make communication in marriage difficult and how we might begin to overcome those. And lastly, we shared some practical and spiritual tips to help you get started on your way to get better in marriage.
And thank you for listening, and we hope that the material and exercises have encouraged and helped you. And we invite you to visit our website, where you can also check out and order other resources like our book, The Healing Marriage, or the Healing Marriage Workbook, which has exercises and worksheets to go with many of the areas we've touched on in this session as well. And you can also write to us and let us know how the course has helped you. We'd love to hear from you. So yeah. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, and see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.